And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Dick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by the Law Group. Melissa Gott and her team. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on this morning. Well, it is a short week as we head into the Thanksgiving holiday on Thursday. We'll be off Thursday and Friday. And so I had a show planned for today, and I decided to throw all of it out the window after reading what I can only describe as a bizarre and insane immigration story that ran over at the New York Times. Now, it's not a news piece, but it is a very, very interesting, almost like mini biography on a guy who had his identity stolen by an illegal immigrant, and how the New York Times frames the story. And it's not like you have to, you know, dissect the words one by one or really kind of get into the nitty gritty. It's right in the headline of the story. It's right at the top. And here's the headline over at the New York Times. Two men, one identity. They both paid the price. Thousands of undocumented workers rely on fraudulent social security numbers. One of them belonged to Dan Culver or Kluver. Two men, one identity. They both paid the price. That's interesting. So you mean somebody committed fraud by stealing somebody else's identity? That individual happens to be, as the New York Times says, an undocumented worker, aka an illegal immigrant, somebody who is not supposed to be in the United States. Right off the top, the phrasing, the framing, the way that they set it up, you know, both people paid. There were two different victims. Very interesting. And so I just felt the need to read through this because it is jarring how major mainstream media outlets like the New York Times, which is absolutely what you would consider the Times, frames this article and frames this story. So we're just going to read through it together. I'm going to walk you through. This will be my third read through of it this morning. I'd love to get your feedback and comments as well as we go through. So we'll get into the details. This is the long and the short of it. A legal U.S. citizen, a born resident in the United States, had his identity stolen by an illegal immigrant, and it caused him and his family an incredible amount of hardship and pain. And of course, the New York Times spends more time on the undocumented worker or the undocumented immigrant, as they describe it. As we get into the latter parts of this article, you will really see the almost unbelievable characterization that the New York Times plays through. So here we go. Dan Kluver saw the police lights flashing in his rearview mirror late last year and eased his car onto the shoulder, thinking there had been some kind of mistake. He had spent four decades in rural Minnesota without even getting into trouble. He prided himself on a life built around dependability and routine, working at the same factory where his father once did and spending his weekends coaching basketball and teaching Sunday school. He had never fired a gun, smoked a cigarette, missed a payment, or been arrested. So regular, everyday, seemingly middle-class, normal guy. No run-ins with the law, no issues. The fact that they put in here, he's never fired a gun. I don't know why the hell that's relevant at all, but, you know, New York Times, so I guess that's what you would expect. License and registration, please, the officer said. Kluver, 42, handed them over and waited while the officer went back to his patrol car. He listened to the church bells that rang every hour and watched sunlight reflect off the grain silos in downtown Olivia, where he knew most of the 2,400 residents, including the officer who was walking back to his car. "Is everything all right?" Kluver asked. The officer responded, "It's strange, but it looks like your license has been suspended. You've got another driver's license with some issues down in Missouri." That's obviously problematic. This guy's in Minnesota, and he's got a another driver's license with issues in a completely different state. So Kluver responded, said, "What? I've barely ever been to Missouri. How is that possible?" The officer had no answers, but Kluver feared he might know what was happening. Over the years, there had been signs that something wasn't right. Stray letters about wages earned in unfamiliar towns and collection notices from debt that wasn't his. Kluver had tried to untangle this mess several times by hiring tax specialists and driving to government offices across the state, only to run into the same bureaucratic dead ends. But now the problem was bigger than unpaid taxes. Someone was impersonating him, moving through the world as Dan Kluver, building a life in his name with a government-issued ID. His case was only what was one version of a problem that's been spreading across the country for years. The government estimates that as many as 1 million undocumented workers, again, illegal migrants. This is the New York Times says undocumented workers. Let's make sure that we understand what we're talking about here. More than 1 million people who defaced our immigration law, who decided that it was not important to follow the process to come into the United States legally. They decided that our immigration system was not relevant. They decided that our laws on the books weren't good enough. So they came into the United States illegally and there are now more than 1 million individuals in the country who are already breaking the law being here illegally, who are stealing, presumably, born U.S. residents' identities, social security numbers, and things of that nature. The government estimates that as many as 1 million undocumented workers are using fraudulent or stolen social security numbers, a survival tactic used to pass background checks and get a job. Wow. Survival tactic. That's a hell of a way to frame that. So if I bust down the door of your house and steal your stuff because maybe I want a bigger television, maybe I need some food. So I beat down the front door of your house to get myself some food. Would you describe that as me committing a survival tactic? Would you consider that a survival tactic? No, I would consider that a crime. Regardless of whether I needed the food or needed the new big screen television, you wouldn't describe that as a survival tactic. You would describe that as a crime because that's exactly what it is. But the New York Times says that's a survival tactic. And I mean, everybody's got to survive, right? Right? I mean, we don't want people to die. Of course not. So it's a survival tactic used by over 1 million illegal immigrants to pass background checks and get a job. The numbers are skimmed from data breaches sold in black markets online for as little as $150. Or handed out in border towns by human smugglers. Many numbers connect back to U.S. citizens' children, dead people, or Puerto Ricans whose numbers circulate easily across the mainland. But thousands of others belong to people like Dan Kluver, Americans whose names and identities no longer are theirs alone. The police officer sent a Kluver home with a warning as he sifted through filing cabinets with his wife, Christy, searching for clues about the other Dan Kluver. His Social Security card was safely locked away alongside the birth certificates of their three children. He'd never been robbed or even lost his wallet, but there was a number printed on a W-2 form from a leather factory in a town he'd never visited. He traced 15 years of records and found more tax documents listing unfamiliar jobs at a cement plant in Kansas, a paper mill in Tennessee, a construction company in Ohio, and a cereal factory in Nebraska, as well as a dog food plant factory in Missouri. His wife asked him, How do they think you're getting between all of these places? It's eerie. With Dan Kluver saying, it's like I've lost control of who I am. Some years, the other Dan Kluter, this is the illegal migrant who'd stolen his identity, had earned more than his own salary at a local sugar beet factory, which pushed the total income under his Social Security number into a higher tax bracket as the debt started to mount. Twice, he'd contacted law enforcement and filed an identity theft report with the federal government, where it landed in a pile along with tens of thousands of similar reports filed each year. He waited for relief while the IRS docked his annual tax returns and garnished a few of his paychecks, costing him thousands of dollars. So here you go. You've got a law-abiding, as the New York Times wrote, never even shot a gun. Or somehow that's some sort of pass to whether you're a born U.S. citizen or not. You've got a law-abiding resident, a law-abiding citizen, who goes to his job every day, provides for his family, and is getting his wages garnished by the IRS because somebody who is illegally in the United States decided to steal his identity. Great. A few months before him and his wife got married in 2012, Christy, his fiance at the time, decided to pay off the balance, emptying her savings and sending a check in for $6,000 to the federal government. Their relief lasted until the next tax season when a new bill arrived, this one for $22,000. They spent the next decade living with the consequences, annual tax audits, budgets that never added up, widespread arguments after the kids went to bed. Kluver kept calling the government numbers and waiting on hold until he eventually resigned himself to a payment plan. He agreed to send the IRS $150 each month, which he had done more than 35 times. He told his wife, "I can't keep obsessing over this and getting nowhere. I need to think about something else." He kept his radio at the factory tuned to sports talk, but lately it was interrupted by news segments about immigration raids and border lockdowns. President Trump was promoting Operation Take Back America, a nationwide campaign to root out undocumented workers using fake IDs. Kluver, a registered Republican, rarely paid attention to politics, but he began to wonder if his case might finally be a priority and if he could reclaim what belonged to him. A few weeks after he was pulled over, he drove to the police station once again in Olivia to submit another affidavit for identity theft. He wrote, "Someone has stolen my ID for working purposes. It's been happening for 15 years. There's another me out there. Can we find him?" He had lived under enough names and numbers in the United States that they started to blur together. So here we get into the individuals responsible. Vincent Trojulo, Ronaldo Guerrera, and then for more than a decade, Daniel Kluver. The names he used until he couldn't barely remember what it felt like to exist as himself. He's 42-year-old Romero Perez Bravo, a Guatemalan immigrant who had spent most of his adult life working under borrowed identities. Borrowed identities is how the New York Times phrases this. Borrowed. So racking up thousands of dollars worth of unpaid taxes, working up crimes, all of this under false premises, all of this under somebody else's identity, and the New York Times, borrowed identities. Again, if I ask you to borrow something and I steal it and never return it, break it, would you describe that as me borrowing something or me stealing something? Hey, can I borrow your leaf blower? I will never return it and you'll never see it again. Would you describe that as borrowed? Probably not. But, you know, that's the New York Times. By the start of 2025, he was preparing for another graveyard shift. Oh, this poor guy legally in the country. Another graveyard shift in St. Joseph, Missouri, lacing his work boots in the darkness of his drafty rental while his wife and five children slept. He packed their school lunches for the next day, drove to the dog food factory, and gathered with his coworkers to say their nightly prayer. Then he swiped his badge to begin another 12-hour shift as Daniel Kluver, sinking deep into an identity that wasn't really his own. This is an insane phrasing, by an insane characterization by the New York Times. Graveyard shift. This guy's busting his ass, getting up in the middle of the night to provide for his family, his wife, and oh, lo and behold, five children. What a freaking surprise. A bunch of anchor babies. To drive to his graveyard shift to pray with his coworkers before beginning his grueling 12-hour shift. Meanwhile, he is destroying the life of a legal U.S. resident, a born U.S. citizen. Daniel, his boss, always shouted, taking attendance before they went out to their lines. He would respond here. Perez Bravo had come to the United States for the first time at 16 to help earn money for his family, traveling alone to join his father in Marshall, Minnesota. He hiked out of the Guatemalan highlands, rode atop a freight train for 3 weeks across Mexico, nearly drowned in the Rio Grande, and took a greyhound to Middle America, where life somehow felt harder. He slept on a couch in his father's apartment and enrolled in high school despite speaking almost no English. Then he began to look for jobs, but no one would hire an underage worker without papers. Yeah, well, no duh. Yeah, I mean, it's already hard to get a job when you're underage. Then, of course, you speak no English whatsoever and you have no papers because you illegally crossed into the United States. But notice how they don't mention that in this thing. They talk about hiking the Guatemalan highlands, riding atop a freight train for 3 weeks across Mexico, which, by the way, I can't believe that it takes 3 weeks for a train to go across Mexico. I mean, it's not that big of a country, but yeah, whatever. Almost drowned in the Rio Grande. But notice something missing in between these two things? Freight train 3 weeks across Mexico, nearly drowned in the Rio Grande, and took a greyhound to Middle America. In the middle there, shouldn't there be something about, oh, I don't know, illegally crossing the border into the United States? Don't you think it would be relevant to add another comma and say something to the extent of bypassing a legal port of entry and entering the United States illegally? They just leave that part out, right? They don't say illegal in this at all. They say that he nearly drowned in the Rio Grande River. Oh, so it's okay because he rode atop a freight train for 3 weeks in Mexico and hiked the mountains of Guatemala and almost drowned in the Rio Grande. At that point, you should just be allowed to come into the United States, right? I mean, at that point, you put in so much effort, to hell with immigration law. You put in so much time and effort, to hell with following U.S. federal immigration law. It doesn't matter. Look at this. He hiked the highlands, rode atop a freight train for 3 weeks and almost drowned. We should have had a big entry for this guy. We should have thrown him a freaking party when he illegally crossed the border. Thank him for his service in coming into the United States illegally. Complete admission by the New York Times, but you know, again, no surprise. Eventually, a turkey processing company offered him a position if he could provide an ID to satisfy the government-required I-9 form. A friend who worked at the factory introduced Perez Bravo to someone else who sold sets of names, IDs, and social security numbers for as little as $250. Perez Bravo thought the documents looked flimsy and fake, but his friend assured him that at least half of the company's workers were using similar IDs. He needed the job, and the turkey plant needed workers. Nobody looked too hard at his paperwork, and soon he was making $7 an hour on the graveyard shift, cutting turkeys at night and going to school in the morning. And so here is the individual at question, the undocumented worker, as the New York Times likes to describe it. The first years were lousy and exhausting. He started to drink, which led to a string of DUIs and other minor offenses. So you gotta love this. You're illegally in the United States of America. You have stolen somebody else's identity to get a job, and it's lonely and exhausting. It's hard and it's tiring. So at that point, as an illegal immigrant who does not have a legal driver's license, who has not passed a road test in the United States in any state to obtain a legal driver's license, is now driving around drunk. It's driving around drunk. But as the New York Times, you know, mentioned at the headline of the article, which, you know, let's just go back to the beginning of the article here. What was the headline? Two men, one identity. They both paid the price. Right? That's the New York Times open and summation of all of this. They both paid the price. So you've got a guy who is illegally in the United States, has committed another felony, stealing somebody's identity, and is now driving around drunk, potentially killing somebody else. But, you know, again, doesn't matter because it's just an undocumented worker, ladies and gentlemen. So he was deported back to Guatemala in 2005, 2008, and 2009. Three different times. Ramiro Perez Bravo was deported from the United States. But each time he returned to the United States illegally, which of course they don't write, returned to the United States illegally and purchased a new ID for work. This might be, and there's some more coming up, this sentence right here might be the most disingenuous in the entire article. So this, let me read the full sentence for you again without any of my modifications. He was deported back to Guatemala in 2005, 2008, and 2009. But each time he returned to the United States and purchased a new ID for work. Didn't return to the United States. He illegally entered the United States again, and he didn't purchase a new ID for work. He stole yet somebody else's identity. He committed yet another felony by stealing somebody's ID, stealing their social security number so that he could get a job. But as the New York Times writes it, you know, just returned and just purchased a new ID. What's the big deal? What's the big hassle? What's everybody getting so pissed off and outraged about? He just returned to the United States after being deported three times. And he just happened to purchase somebody's ID, ruining somebody else's life. But, it happens. It's an undocumented worker, after all. Some Social Security numbers were connected to child support or other debts, which meant his paychecks were garnished. Others were flagged as suspicious by HR departments. He sought out new documents from the black market, sending a few text messages, and then meeting a middleman on a street corner in Nebraska to pay cash. This time, the Social Security card was from Daniel Kluver. Perez Bravo didn't know if that person was fake or dead or a victim of identity theft or somehow into the scheme, but the number worked at a succession of factory jobs across the Midwest. Like millions of undocumented immigrants, he paid federal and state taxes that were automatically deducted from his paycheck, which is an incredibly disingenuous way to phrase that. But okay. To Perez Bravo, that meant he was contributing thousands into the Social Security fund from which he would never collect. Oh, terrible. Horrible. The guy illegally in the United States. The guy who has now stolen somebody's identity. The guy that was deported three times for not being here legally is never going to be able to collect Social Security. Damn it. I mean, our system is broken. This poor bastard who had broken federal immigration law multiple times, had committed identity theft God knows how many times, is not going to be able to collect Social Security. Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm beside myself. Really? We're going to talk about how he's paid thousands into the system and never is going to be able to collect Social Security? Really? That's the important part? That's the takeaway here? That's the relevant information? But to the IRS, it looked like one Daniel Kluver who was working several jobs, making more than $130,000 a year and paying a tax rate for someone living just above the poverty line. The debts accumulated in Olivia, Minnesota, but the paychecks kept coming in St. Joseph, Missouri. By the time Trump was elected to his second term, there were five children in Romero Perez Bravo's house who also depended on the money that came in each Friday in Kluver's name. Most were U.S. citizens ranging from 4 to 19 who answered in his Spanish with English and hosted birthday parties at Olive Garden. So anchor babies. That's what we're talking about here. Most of which, not all, but most of which were U.S. citizens because that's the anchor baby program that exists. You come into the United States illegally, you're deported three times, you have a bunch of kids, and they become U.S. citizens by default. You want to talk about a broken immigration system? There's your broken immigration system. Romero Perez Bravo wanted to live and work under his own name. Oh, really? Did he want to do that before or after he was driving drunk in the United States and got deported three times? What was the order of operations on this? He wanted to live and work under his own name. So he signed up for extra shifts and stacked overtime until he could afford to hire an immigration lawyer earlier this year. He paid $4,000 up front, only to learn that the pathway to citizenships were essentially closed under the Trump administration for someone with a history of DUIs and deportations, even if he'd stopped drinking and kept his record clean for the past 15 years. Darn. Darn. He told his lawyers, quote, "All I do is take care of my family and go to work. Is there no way to fix this?" No, there's not. Call me heartless if you must. Say I have no compassion if you will. But no, there is no way to fix this. You've come into the country illegally. You've spat on the United States government and our immigration laws. You've caused headache and hardship for legally born or legally residing U.S. citizens. You've put others at risk by drinking and driving multiple times. And now you're looking for your pathway to citizenship. Give me a freaking break. With his lawyer responding, the situation right now is very complicated. His brother-in-law had already been pulled over on his way back to work and detained as part of Operation Take Back America. Three other Guatemalan families had disappeared from church. The governor had ordered the local police to assist ICE in making arrests, and Missouri was turning some of its county jails into immigrant detention centers. The New York Times goes on. A group of far-right activists in St. Joseph had organized a tip line where people could report neighbors who they suspected were in the country illegally. Far-right activists? Really? So you have to be a far-right, radical, right-wing extremist to believe that coming into the United States illegally, that breaking our immigration laws, that stealing somebody's identity, multiple people's identity, creating hell and havoc for them, all of that is justified? I mean, according to the New York Times, I guess so. If God forbid you report somebody who is breaking the law, you know, aren't the Democrats the ones of see something, say something? Isn't that their big motto? You hear it at every freaking public transportation station across the U.S., whether you're at an airport, a train station, a Greyhound bus station. If you see something, say something. See something, say something. But if you see something, say something with your somebody who you believe is illegally in the country. Ah, you're a far-right activist. Now I understand. Now I see. We'll continue with what I can only describe as this bizarre immigration story over at the New York Times. And it gets even better, folks. You have to stay tuned and hear the remainder of that. We'll get to the rest of this, plus some of your comments coming up as the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Monday morning. Before we continue, I do want to thank the law group here in Wilmington for their continued support of the program. And I want to let you know that when legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in Melissa Gott and her team right here in the law group in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, ladies and gentlemen. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088. Or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. I cannot tell you how thankful I am for Melissa Gott and the amazing team over at the Law Group in Wilmington, not only for the work that I've done with them and when I purchased my house, but for their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. All right, we'll head back to this New York Times story about how we're supposed to feel so much sympathy for the guy who came into the United States illegally three times, drinks and drives, steals other people's identities. We'll get back to that coming up here in just a couple of minutes as the Nick Craig Show rolls on this Monday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. All right. Good Monday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show as we continue this morning with a very interesting piece. That's probably the best way to describe it over at the New York Times. This is a very lengthy piece that they published over the weekend with the headline this: Two men, one identity, they both paid the price. Thousands of undocumented workers rely on fraudulent Social Security numbers. One of them belonged to Daniel Clarver, however his last name is pronounced. So as we've already established at this point, we've got a guy in the country illegally. His name is Romeo Perez Bravo. He came into the United States illegally back presumably in the early 2000s. He was deported three times. He had multiple DUIs when he was in the United States, and he had stolen multiple people's identities so that he could work, causing them to rack up tens of thousands of dollars in debt to the IRS. In one case, Daniel Clarver paid $6,000. His fiance paid $6,000 to the IRS. And then they got a $22,000 tax bill the next year. His wages were garnished, and he is on a payment plan with the IRS to make up taxes that he did not earn, making up for wages that were, in fact, not his. So now we're getting into how a group of right-wing radicals are truly the problem here. A group of far-right activists in St. Joseph had organized a tip line where people could report neighbors who they suspected were in the country illegally. Perez Bravo called them the hunters, and increasingly he felt like prey, living close to the ground. He stopped going for evening walks to the park with his four-year-old son. He drove the back roads into work. He turned down promotions that would have required extra paperwork and then cashed his paychecks each Friday rather than risking the record of a bank account. Well, you know, folks, unfortunately, actions have consequences. I mean, I don't know why this has become such a foreign concept, but if you're going to be living in the United States illegally, you're probably going to have to deal with some of this. I mean, I don't know why I'm supposed to feel any sympathy. You are actively breaking federal immigration law. And for somebody that has already been deported three times, this is no longer the situation of, oh, somebody screwed up and came into the United States. We need to pay them deference. Nonsense. This guy willingly broke federal immigration law three times, was drinking and driving God knows where through the state of Missouri, putting people at risk, and now had to turn down promotions at work. Who freaking cares? I mean, you gotta be kidding me. He spent four nights each week at an immigrant church on the outskirts of downtown. It was one of the few places in the United States where he felt safe enough to go by his own name. One of the pastors had started a text message group, and each day the congregation shared a new mix of prayers and precautions. One person wrote, "Stay away from Walmart today. I heard about a raid. Lots of activity." Somebody else responded, "Everybody okay?" Perez Bravo told the group, "I'm home trying to survive." Ugh, trying to survive. And here's him shopping at, let me take my picture off here. Here's him shopping at Walmart with his anchor babies. Here's him using a broom in his house and I guess braiding his daughter, wife's hair, whatever. I mean, so this is just your guy. This is just your regular, everyday good guy who's done nothing wrong, and we need to just completely bend immigration law around him. The case of Daniel Clover's stolen identity landed in the tiny Olivia Police Department, where it was assigned early, this year to Officer Damian Coates, a rookie who had never investigated an identity theft or much else. He'd only recently accepted his first policing job in his wife's hometown, the self-proclaimed corn capital of the world. Some nights he was the only officer on duty. He was expecting to handle everything from traffic infractions to farming disputes to complex investigations. So he asked Clover for some paperwork and started digging. His online searches turned up dozens of results in Clover's names, in the government databases, a string of addresses in St. Joseph, Missouri, car titles, work authorizations, and insurance forms. Within a few weeks, Coots had assembled a full binder of evidence, including a photo of a Missouri driver's license. Clover studied an image of the ID, his own name printed alongside a photo of a stranger, browned eyes, neat goatee, and a friendly smile, with Daniel asking, "Who is he?" with the officer responding, "That's what we're trying to figure out." He passed the case along to the St. Joseph Police, who brought in federal agents from the Department of Homeland Security. The detectives started to investigate, updating Clover every few days as they traced the other Dan Clover's routine from his house to his church to his job at the dog food factory. They learned that he was an undocumented immigrant from Guatemala. He worked 60 to 70 hours each week, and he was living with a wife and several children and had already been deported three times. And then came a detail from a police report that Clover couldn't shake. In the summer of 2022, the other Dan Clover, so the guy, as we know now, is Romero Perez Bravo, illegally in the United States, was driving to work in St. Joseph when the serpentine belt broke in his car, causing him to lose control at a red light and collide with a grandfather and his 9-year-old granddaughter as they rode on a motorized tricycle. The girl sustained minor injuries, but the 68-year-old man flew off the bike, broke his pelvis in two places, struck his head, and died. So, here you go, with everybody's favorite, Romeo Perez Bravo. Not only did he come into the United States illegally three times, not only was he drinking and driving, he has now killed a 68-year-old man and could have killed his 9-year-old granddaughter. The driver stayed on the scene, praying and cooperating with police as he handed over a license and registration for Dan Clover. He was cleared of any wrongdoing. The crash was ruled an accident, but the victim's family had filed a wrongful death lawsuit with Clover listed as the defendant. So now you've got the actual Dan Clover, the actual guy who is the U.S. resident who has not done anything wrong, told his wife, "It just keeps getting more unbelievable. I can understand doing whatever you have to do to provide for your kids, but now somebody's death is attached to my name. And it could be worse. What if he was violent? What if he was a terrorist?" his wife responded and said. Christy was a nurse practitioner at a nearby hospital where she often treated patients whose IDs didn't match their medical records. Some days it was part of her job to untangle identities through an interpreter, saying, quote, "I'm so tired of dealing with a broken system." At the Beet Factory, Kluver worked alongside dozens of immigrants from Mexico and Central America who had become his friends. They took the hardest shifts and asked about his family and taught him phrases in Spanish. A wave of migrant workers had helped revolutionize small towns throughout rural Minnesota, harvesting crops during a labor shortage, buying up empty houses, opening restaurants, and reinvigorating old churches. But what bothered him lately was the idea he kept hearing from liberal politicians and even some relatives in Minnesota that illegal immigration was mostly harmless, a victimless crime. His name was no longer his own. His debts were spiraling. He was still cutting checks to the IRS for $150 each month, and the government said that the debt was his to pay until a court determined otherwise. Even if the other Dan Kluver seemed to be a decent man, working, raising a family, going to church, his patience had limits. So now the actual legal resident, Dan Kluver, texted anything new to one of the detectives earlier this spring. The system was backlogged with millions of suspicious numbers and almost 80,000 reports of Social Security fraud in the last 6 months alone, but his case had finally landed at the top of the pile. The agent responded back saying, "We are planning on next week to grab him." So it was finally happening. Now we go back to the individual who's illegally in the country multiple times, has killed a man, multiple DUIs, so on and so forth, stolen identities. This is talking about Romero Perez Bravo. He was getting ready for his next 12-hour shift at the dog food factory in late March when he heard pounding on the front door of his house and felt dread rise in his chest. Through the bedroom window, he saw five cars lined up outside and several federal agents waiting beside his children's bikes and shoes on the front porch. He said a quick prayer, left his children in their rooms, and walked downstairs to open the door. One of the officers asked Daniel Kluver, and he knew it was over. They showed him an arrest warrant in his real name and handcuffed him before leading him out of the house. He was charged with aggravated identity theft and false representation of a Social Security number and was held in detention for 6 weeks before an initial bond hearing in April of 2025. The state of Missouri argued that he was a flight risk who needed to remain in custody until the trial, with the prosecutor saying, "What's to stop him from going out and getting another identity and just living underneath that?" The prosecutors told the judge, "We've seen that before." But Perez Bravo had most of his family and several members of his church at the hearing, and his lawyer said that he was, quote, connected to the city in deep ways. He regularly cooked for 60 people at church barbecues. He had a son who was about to graduate from high school, a boss who wrote letters testifying to his work ethic, and a pastor who was willing to pay a $1,000 bond on his behalf and risk her house as collateral. "This is a kind of family, and they help everybody," the pastor testified. "We're going to help him." The judge ruled that he could return home with an ankle monitor until his next court date as long as he stopped using Kluver's name and Social Security number. And so here you've got the individual in question at church, according to the New York Times. That meant that he could no longer work. Oh, the humanity. He can no longer rack up wages and unpaid IRS bills as somebody else. Darn. That meant that he could no longer work. So he spent his afternoons in a dark living room with his Bible quotes printed on the wall, doing puzzles with his four-year-old while the rest of the family came and went. His wife cleaned houses, his daughters washed linens at hotels, and two of his sons worked in restaurants, but it still wasn't enough to make up for the lost income in Kluver's name. Perez Bravo made tacos by the hundreds and sold them to neighbors. He sold his car and some of his lawn tools to cover rent, losing 25 pounds to stress as he disassembled his life one sale at a time. His lawyers had advised him that he was essentially out of options. She had managed to postpone his case until at least January 2026, but he faced a mandatory minimum sentence of 2 years in prison, followed by a deportation to Guatemala. During the initial court hearings, Perez Bravo had listened to the prosecutors talk about the other Dan Cluver, a loyal employee, a devoted father, a debtor sending monthly payments, a victim of a broken system. Perez Bravo, this is the guy illegally in the country, told his wife, "He sounds like me, a good worker. I don't want to mess things up for anyone. I just want to work. It makes me crazy with no jobs. How many hours can I sit and pray?" Oh, this is such bullshit. I mean, just absolute BS from top to bottom. "He sounds like me, a good worker. I don't want to mess things up for anybody." No. No. That's why you went out and stole multiple people's identities, right? You don't want to mess things up for anybody. You just want to work. You don't want to mess things up. That's not why you came into the country illegally three times. "How many hours can I just sit and pray?" Ugh. Supposed to be tugging at my heartstrings with this? Am I supposed to feel sympathy for the, 41-year-old guy who'd come into the country illegally three times, who was drinking and driving, who was racking up tens of thousands of dollars worth of IRS debt under other people's names, who had killed a 68-year-old guy riding a bike with his granddaughter? Supposed to feel sympathy for this guy? That's obviously what this is trying to get from me, right? Because you wouldn't phrase this any other way unless you were trying to cause my heart to bleed for Romero Perez Bravo, right? I mean, no legitimate entity, no legitimate outlet would phrase this any other way unless that's what you were trying to invoke. His wife told him, "You're still here. That's what matters." He responded, "I'm here and I'm worthless. That is not a life." He got up and walked on to the front porch. Lately, most of his relatives were too afraid to go outside. But Perez Bravo had already been arrested and needed the air. What's he going to do? I mean, he's already... He's got an ankle monitor on. He's got a court date coming up, but I'm supposed to believe he's afraid to go outside. What's he going to do? Get arrested again? I mean, seriously. He went to get the mail with his 4-year-old trailing behind him, never more than a few feet away since the arrest. He found two envelopes, one an old pay stub addressed to Daniel Cluver and the other a court notice for Romero Perez Bravo. He grabbed them both, two names tied to one number, and then followed his son back into the house. End story. End story from the New York Times. Let me say this before I get into some comments, some great comments coming in on our live chats this morning. In terms of kind of tracking down a story, I think the New York Times actually did a pretty damn good job with that. I mean, this was a very in-depth, I don't know how many words this story was, but I mean, this thing was like probably 2,000 words. I mean, this is a very lengthy story by the New York Times. So in terms of substance, very good story. In terms of phrasing, in terms of characterizing the situation, it is blatantly obvious what the objective of this is. It's to try and show that an individual who is woefully ignored a variety of laws, whether we're talking about immigration law, whether we're talking about operating a motor vehicle when intoxicated, dealing with identity theft. I mean, just a litany of laws that this guy has not bothered to follow. And they're trying to draw an emotional reaction from you. They're trying to draw an emotional reaction from me that you're supposed to feel sympathy. And it's just right there in that, like, that second to last paragraph. "I just want to work. I don't mean to hurt anybody." But see, this goes back to the whole point of this broader discussion over illegal immigration. As the New York Times admits, like right within one of the first paragraphs of this article, there's over 1 million individuals in the United States illegally who are using either children's social security numbers, who of course won't find out that their identity's been stolen in many cases till they go to apply for college, because that's probably the first time that you're ever turning over a social security number. If you're getting some sort of student loans or whatever, that's the first time you'll find out about it. Or maybe you're getting a credit card or something at the age of 18 years old. You're never going to find out until you're about to begin your life, your adult life. You're stealing the identity of individuals who are having to bear the burden of tens of thousands of dollars worth of debt in your name to the federal government. And of course, the IRS, the useless entity that they are, doesn't bother to help Dan Cluver out in this situation at all. No issue there at all for them. Or you're stealing the identity of a dead person, which you might say, oh, well, at least with the dead person, it's a victimless crime. Well, they're not really. They're still a victim. Somebody's paying those bills. An estate or somebody is still dealing with that. But see, that's the part that is never really talked about or mentioned by the media. Because when you start describing this as a crime that does in fact have victims, when you begin to describe this as a crime in which people have to actually pay the consequences for it, then the whole thing kind of falls apart. And the narrative to me really kind of broke down and fell apart when you found out that this guy had four anchor babies in the United States collecting benefits, multiple DUI arrests, had been deported three times, killed a 68-year-old man riding a bike. I mean, the whole thing just shatters. The whole thing just completely falls apart. All of this to invoke an emotional reaction. Illegal immigration has been and will continue to be a major problem. And the reason that I pushed everything else aside this morning is this article really, again, while I disagree with the way in which they phrased a lot of things, the overall structure of the article and, kind of walking through how this process played out is a disaster. And it goes to show you the real life implications of illegal immigration. While Democrats and those on the political left say, oh, these people, they're not doing anything wrong. They just want to be in the country. They just want to work. So is this the price that you have to pay as a legal U.S. citizen? As a legal U.S. resident? You are at the whim of the federal bureaucracy that doesn't give a damn or hasn't given a damn in the past about this? The only reason that Daniel Cluver is hopefully going to get some relief on this and hopefully get all of this money back from the IRS is because Donald Trump's administration is cracking down on people that are illegally in the country. So the next time that you hear we can only go after violent offenders, and that anybody that isn't violent but is illegally in the country isn't harming anybody, remember this story. New York Times admitted it. There's over 1 million illegal migrants in the country that are running this exact same gambit, this exact same scam, putting the burden on law-abiding residents of the United States who have done nothing wrong but have fallen victim to some sort of identity theft. So the next time that you have to listen to some bleeding heart liberal tell you about how these people have never done anything wrong. They come from war-torn countries. They come from dictatorships. They have no other option. No, they do in fact have another option. Follow our immigration law. Is it expensive? Yes. Is it time-consuming? Yes. And I will contend to you this morning that it should be. It's a big deal to be an American. It's a big deal to be in the United States of America. Big deal. It's not easy. It shouldn't be easy. I'm very fortunate. Many of you are very fortunate. You were born in the United States. But for those that come from other places, you want to live the American dream? I'm all for it. You want to provide for your family? I'm all for it. But you have to do it legally. You can't spit in the face of America, breaking our immigration law, stealing people's identities, drinking and driving, killing a 68-year-old guy on a bicycle, and then expect me to have an outpouring of sympathy for somebody like that. It's just not going to happen. We've got a lot of great comments coming in on our live chat this morning. John says the legal pathway is to self-deport, back pay what is owed in taxes, and go back in line for reentry. That would be a legal option, but you know, for somebody like this, that's not going to happen. Because he'd already been deported three times, when his immigration lawyer tells him he doesn't have any other options, they're right. But again, he chose to do that. At any point outside of earlier this year, Romero Perez Bravo could have gone through this legal process. He could have done it in 2006 when he first got deported. He could have done it in 2008, the second time he got deported. He could have done it in 2009. When the third time he got deported, but he chose not to. He waited until 2024, 2025 to hire an immigration lawyer to begin the process. Too late. Too late. Not under this administration. Not under these policies. It's just not going to happen. Another comment coming in. I'm sure that the New York Times will go on to expose that he's contributing by paying taxes into Medicare without receiving benefits, i.e. taxpaying citizens. Exactly. The New York Times also left out the fact that he was occupying a house and that there was a housing shortage. Perhaps not in that town, but it illustrates that millions of illegals are part of the shortage problem. Great point as well. Great point as well. So I'm going to throw a link to this article in our show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. For those that support the show financially, you can get access to those daily show notes. It's somebody shared it to me as a gift article, so it's free to read and free to share around. I'd encourage you to send this to somebody and have them read it. Again, it's a long read. It's not something that is, you're not going to skim through this in 5 minutes. You'll miss the substance. You really got to read through it. This is my third read through of it. And I've learned something new and taken something away from it every single time. And so this might be a good article to share around. It's not overly sensationalized. Yes, of course, they're trying to get an emotional reaction from you. Sure. But I mean, after reading this, I think you'd be hard pressed to find individuals that are of the mindset. And I did note, looking at the bottom of this article and looking at some of the comments that were posted, pretty surprising comments on the New York Times website, because you had a lot of individuals. You had a lot of individuals in the comments that were not seemingly buying into the narrative here from the New York Times. This one I wanted to point out. Edward commented this. This article makes me seethe and should have been published years and years ago. And the headline, essentially equalizing the two men, is pandering. The reality is that one man is a law-abiding American citizen and a victim. The other man is criminally illegal living within our country that has thought his selfish actions disrupted the life of an innocent person. They are not equal. So there was, and that was just one of the comments that I put out. There was a lot more. It's like a 900 or 1,000 comments on this post. And it just, to me, even solidified the point even more that when we look at some of this polling, as we did last week, and look at some of this data over the issue of illegal immigration, the vast majority of the country is not in favor of people being in the country illegally. They think it's ridiculous. They think it's absurd. They understand that there are victims associated with it, and they want it to stop. That is one of the large reasons that so many people supported President Donald Trump in 2024. So I'm not sure if the Times will do a follow-up. I'm not sure if they're going to, from the immigration attorney for Perez Bravo, some court date in January of 2026. Not sure if they'll do a follow-up, but it's something I'll put on my calendar and see if we can find out any additional details as we turn the calendar into next year. If anything relevant comes forward or another long piece, we'll bring it to you right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, that's going to do it for a Monday edition. Thanks to the law group here in Wilmington, Melissa Gott and her team, for their continued support. give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Make sure you share the Nick Craig Show with your friends, family, and coworkers. We stream live weekday morning, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcast. We'll do it again tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.